That was a little anecdote to indicate something of the problem. Some years ago, not very many, when I was having lunch at Bigelow's Pharmacy, which I've enjoyed for a long time, I'm sitting at on the shelf there waiting for my sandwich, and a little boy about 12 years old comes in and sits at my left. With him, a little boy about 7, and with the very little boy, his mother. And the little chap at my left arm says, bringing a little account of what had happened at school today, "Jimmy wrote a paper on evolution. And teacher said he was wrong, that Adam and Eve were our first parents." Well, I thought, what a teacher. And the mother said, "Well, of course, teacher was right. Adam and Eve were our first parents." I thought, what a mother. The little boy, and I'm willing to propose him for a medal from the Smithsonian Institute, the little boy said, "Yes, I know, but this was a scientific paper." Then the mother said, "Oh, those scientists. Those are only theories." And so my little hero replies, "They're theories, all right, but they've been factualized. They found the bones." Now, this is our problem, my friends. That's a 12-year-old. And he has been polite enough to say, "Yes, I know, Adam and Eve were our first parents, but this was a scientific paper." So he has learned to divide his dear little head exactly in half, with religion on one side and science on the other. Now, some fine day, that dividing panel's going to be withdrawn, and he's going to have what the clergy call doubts. With respect, then, to mythology, how come that it has been so potent in the shaping of human life? It can be said that mythology is co-evil with man. The very earliest evidences we have of Homo sapiens, even Homo neanderthalensis, show religious ideas. As early as 200,000 BC, there are burials with grave gear, equipment to keep the person going in the next world. There are little sanctuaries of worship where cave bear skulls are revered, the cave bear in the role of the animal master who sends and takes back the animals. And then when we turn to the great Cro-Magnon caves of 30,000 BC in southern France and northern Spain, we have a great galaxy of mythic forms. I remember once visiting the beautiful cave at Lascaux in the Dordogne in southern France. I had driven down from Paris and on the way had stopped at the great Cathedral of Chartres, one of the most glorious experiences of religious art in the world. And there was the whole pantheon of man's belief in the forms of beautiful angelic forms and incarnations and saints and angels. And then a few days later, I was in the great cave of Lascaux, another great cathedral, and the mystery of man's imagination was before us in the form of beasts, glorious, radiant, divine animals. Man's earliest religion is the religion of reverence for the animal world round about him, his neighbors. And there's a curious thing about man. Man has a wonderful capacity to make believe, he is something else. He is the beast without fixed response system. He can be anything. He can be a professor, a mechanic, an astronaut. He can be doctor, lawyer, Indian chief. and consequently, in his early innocence, isn't anything. And he finds himself by imitating something. The greatest experience I ever had of the way a person can become imitative of something was one day when I drove up to the curb, and there was a little boy, again about 12 years old, standing there. It's a great age. And this little youngster standing very stiffly, strangely stiffly, he said, "You can't stop here." And I said, I looked, there was no sign. I said, "Well, why not?" He said, "Well, I'm a hydrant." And I didn't want to, you know, desecrate sacred ground, so I went down the block. Now, you never know when a kid is talking this way how far he pushes it, how far the belief goes. And I feel the same way about a clergyman all dressed up to look like God. How far is he pushing this thing?